Well, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. It's October 4th, and we are talking about career changes, or not career changes, but careers. And yesterday, we did talk about career changes. We talked about advancing or taking your career to the next level. And this is kind of a good phrase that we talked about. To the next level just means, as one of our panelists says, in playing video games, that you want to advance and go on. So, from level 6 to level 7, right?
You've got to save the princess or prince.
Right.
That's right.
Right. So, it just means to advance in your career. And I have two great panelists with me today to discuss this. And let's see what they remember what we talked about yesterday.
Well, yesterday, yes, I'm Rebecca. And so yesterday, the thing that I really remember and want to remind you all of is don't throw out your old resume. You only need to rework it a little bit. And also, when it comes with your experience, quantify your experience. Don't just write down what you did, but rather, I guess, describe what you did.
Right. And remember, you need to be brief about it, though. You know, people don't want to read like a long paragraph. So like if you can do it in a sentence, because mostly people want to read a one-page resume.
Right.
Don't you think?
That's true. I was always told keep my resume on one page.
All right.
Hi, everyone. Albert here. And I was stuck with me from yesterday was to plan ahead. You want to show your employer or potential employers that you have your act together. You may not know what it is that you want to do, but if you can just lay the foundation and show them, then, you know, they'll be like, hey, this is a person that is worth taking the time to invest in, to hire, and, you know, give them a job and give them a tryout.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, as one example that I can't really think of to career, but, you know, sometimes you could just show people like, oh, I started joining the gym. It's like, oh, this person is trying to change their lifestyle and whatnot.
But you got to go as well.
Oh, that's a whole different story.
You can't just join the gym and not go.
That's a whole nother level of approach.
Okay. Well, today we are going to take we have a really interesting article. It's in the same vein. Mm-hmm. It's not really about giving advice about taking your career to the next level, but it is about what to do with your money, and it's from somebody who has a lot of money. So it's a very interesting article. So if you have your advanced magazine with you, please open it to page 13, and you can follow along in our reading, or perhaps you have it on your mobile device and you can find it. And we're going to start reading on page 13 in the left-hand column in the middle of the page and read to the middle of the right-hand column.
Six things Bill Gates says you should do with your money. Some 40 years ago, Bill Gates set out on a road to revolutionize the world by putting a computer on every desk. Gates was thinking big. He's offered up some valuable advice over the years. And when a man worth $79.2 billion speaks, you should probably listen. Invest in your education. That seems like good advice, considering that people 25 and older with a bachelor's degree earn an average of 40% more than those with only a high school diploma. Gates told Harvard students that when he was in college, he was a procrastinator. Then he went into business and grew serious.
It doesn't seem possible that it's over 40 years ago that Bill Gates set about to revolutionize the world. And when you revolutionize something, what do you do, Albert?
When you revolutionize something, you change it completely and hopefully for the better.
Mm-hmm. And he certainly has done that. And his way of wanting to revolutionize the world was by giving everybody a computer. Mm. I think this also is very telling because it says putting a computer on every desk. So we're talking about desktop computers. So mm-hmm. that was the goal 40 years ago.
Not only on a desk in office, but in your home.
Right. Desktop computers. Yeah, home computers or desktop computers. I'm just thinking about how it's changed to tablets now and your mobile phones and things like that. So it had to start somewhere.
Right. Wow. It's incredible because it seems like computers are such a big part of our lives.
Right.
And it seems like they've always been a big part of our lives. And for some of you, you've always had a computer. And so the idea of not having computers seems like a very foreign thing.
Yeah, they used to be in big government buildings. They take up like 3-4 rooms and only like top-level clearance officials can access it.
Yeah. Right. Or, like, even in our home when I was younger, we only had one computer.
Mm-hmm.
We had one computer that we would all share. And now it's very normal for most people to have their own computer.
Right. All the kids have some form, and that's right. Well, we see he definitely did revolutionize the world, and he was, what was he doing here? He was thinking big. This is a great idiom, isn't it, Rebecca?
Yes, it's actually a great idiom, and it just means to have plans to be very successful or powerful. We could also say that Gates was a visionary, so he had like this big vision for what he wanted to do with computers, and I can tell you he definitely has revolutionized not just computers, but just the way people use computers, the world.
And we see that he's giving some advice. When you offer up something, it means that you give something. He's giving some advice. So we see that this was published in GoBankingRates.com, the original article was. So if it's published in a publication like that, you know that bankers and people that are investing are reading this. He now is worth $79.2 billion. And I like it. So people do listen to him.
No, that actually surprised me that, you know, when a man worth $79.2 billion speaks, you should probably listen. And I just thought, wow, so we're really putting a price on Bill Gates.
And it's also 0.2. It just can't be 79 flat.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, 0.2 is a lot of money. We're talking about a billion. And I think his first point, so he's going to give us six pointers or six things that we should do with our money. And the first one is invest in your education. Okay? And it's very interesting. The other part of it that was kind of edited here is for those who make under $100,000 a year.
Oh.
So if you make under $100,000 a year, he's saying that you should invest more in your education.
Oh.
Interesting.
That's very interesting.
So it says that it seems like good advice considering that people 25 and older with a bachelor's degree earn an average of 40% more than those with only a high school diploma. That makes sense, doesn't it?
It does make sense. I was actually very encouraged by this point. I read it and I thought, way to go, Bill Gates. I do think that it is important to invest in your education. And I feel like these days a lot more people in the States, but even just around the world, are looking to invest in their education. But one thing I have a hard time with, though, is especially in the States, people taking out student loans. I kind of wanted to ask Bill Gates, if I could ask him a question, how he would handle student loans.
This is where I find it not surprising because I was like, only 40%? Because college is expensive. You got books, you got tuition, you got 4 to 5 years of your life dedicated to school.
Well, I think, you know, when we think about, when university comes to mind, what comes to mind to you guys? I think we're thinking big time, like Harvard, Yale, Stanford, but you don't have to start there. You know, there's a lot of ways to get a college education. You can start by going to a junior college. Those credits are all transferred into universities. And not all state universities are, you know, super, super expensive. So, I think we have to, like, think about what our perception of an education is. Don't you think?
Well, that is true. I do agree, Linda, because it seems like a lot of people think, when they think of education, they think about Harvard, Stanford, one of these really big elite schools that cost a fortune, that is, cost a lot of money. But you can get a decent education at one of the state universities. Now, of course, when we're talking about universities, we're talking about the universities in the States. I'm not exactly sure how the universities work here in Taiwan or in other places.
Well, I think it's probably same here because people, when you're hiring for specific jobs, you're looking at what somebody's bringing to the table or what they have to offer. I also think it has to do with maybe your self-confidence. I think that probably a person with a college education or even a master's degree maybe has a little bit more self-confidence in it depends upon what they want to do than a person coming to apply for a job with a high school diploma.
Right. Well, I mean, once you've gone to college, once you've gotten your undergrad, and then once you've gotten your master's degree, you have all of that education under your belt, and so you should be a little bit more confident in who you are. You have a lot more knowledge, and you just know yourself better in some ways.
Also, you know, I think looking at, because I'm a lot older than you guys, so looking at education over the years, it seems to me that basically a college degree is almost the same as a high school diploma was when I graduated.
Or in terms of job market requirements,
right,
or competitiveness.
Right. Mm-hmm. And a master's degree is almost, in a lot of fields, is almost equivalent to having an undergraduate degree.
I would agree with that. I feel like a lot more people these days are going to college. And because a lot more people are going to college, it's a lot more competitive as far as the job market goes. And people are looking for people with an education. Like way back when, 40, 50, 60 years ago, college wasn't as popular.
Right. I'm the first one in my family to get a college education.
Mm. Okay.
So, you know, I think it's kind of started. Mm-hmm. I think it depends upon your family as well.
Well, it's like, I mean, even in my family, I'm the second person on my mom's side of the family to get an education, to get a degree, because they just didn't go to college.
Right. Well, we see that Gates went to Harvard, actually.
Hmm.
Well, no, he told Harvard students that when he was in college, I take that back. But I think he did go to Harvard or Yale, didn't he?
I want to say he went to Harvard.
Well, he was speaking there, and when he was giving a talk there, he told them that when he was in college, he was a procrastinator. I read a little bit more about this, too. He never went to class.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
He only crammed for tests, and then he dropped out. I think that everybody probably that knows anything about Bill Gates knows this. And he dropped out, and that's when he went into business and he got serious. So it doesn't, you know, he's saying you need to get a college education or invest in your education, but he, I think, is an example about when you find what you want to do, he had to have studied what he was doing.
Well, if anything, I feel like, you know, he didn't take this path, but he's recommending it for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he realizes and sees the value in getting higher education.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, okay, we have a few more points that we want to talk about, so let's finish reading this page now.
Embrace your critics. In his 1999 book, Business at the Speed of Thought, Gates wrote about the importance of negative feedback. Your most unhappy customers are your greatest sources of learning, he wrote. Embrace bad news to learn where you need the most improvement. Learn to say no. There are still only 24 hours in anyone's day. The difference between the successful and unsuccessful is how they spend those hours. Bill repeated the words his friend Warren Buffett said to him. You have to be good at saying no. Gates explained that saying no allows you to concentrate on the things that really make a difference.
Okay, we have the next section. The first piece of advice that Bill Gates gave us was to invest in your education, and the second one is to embrace your critics. He doesn't mean give them a hug.
No.
Okay, so what does this mean, embrace your critics? We like to hang out with people that agree with us and like us, don't we?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's easier that way when people are positive and say
feel good.
Yeah, and say good things about you and say good things about your work. But I really do like this point because Bill Gates is saying embrace your critics. That means you should actually listen to the people that have something to say about your work where you can improve.
Right, and you shouldn't. A lot of times when somebody, I think it all depends upon how people say it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if somebody's being negative toward something that we've done, we automatically shut off.
Mm-hmm.
No. But here it means you should really pay attention to them. And he wrote about this. I like the title of this book, Business at the Speed of Thought. When I first read this and got to the last word, because I haven't read this book, was like, oh, thought? It wasn't light. And he wrote about the importance of negative feedback, and I don't think a lot of us realize how important that is.
Right. I mean, I love my friends and family, but I feel like the times when I've grown the most was, you know, through people that I've butted heads with, you know, that I have arguments or disagreements with. They may not like me, and that's okay, but I feel like that's when you can grow and learn.
Right. And we could call that constructive criticism, you know, when someone comes along and they see an area where you need to improve, whether it be in a writing that you did or an article or whatever, and they tell you, you know, they provide constructive criticism or negative feedback.
Right, and I want to point out that you don't go up to your friends and say, okay, you need to change the way you dress.
You could.
No, we're not talking about that. Here, he's talking about unhappy customers.
Mm-hmm.
They are your greatest sources of learning. And because he is in a business, you need to find out how what you are producing is affecting your customers, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Are they happy with it? What's wrong with it? If you think everything is perfect and you're not going to change anything, then, you know, you're going to lose those customers. But if you listen to them constructively, hopefully it's constructive criticism,
right,
as you said, then you can make those, you can at least look into it and see if those kind of changes need to be made.
Right. Don't just write off bad news.
Right. Well put.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then learn to say no.
Ooh, this is a good one.
Ooh.
Okay, Rebecca.
Good, good, good. Learning how to say no. And I really like there are still only 24 hours in anyone's day. And, of course, there's going to be so many good things out there. People are going to tell you to do one thing and do this thing and so many different things, so many good things. And if you don't learn how to say no, or if you don't know how to say no, then you're going to be pulled in a gazillion directions. Okay, not literally, but just a lot of different directions.
Could you define gazillion?
A gazillion directions.
Many
yes,
ways.
So many different ways. And then you may not end up doing the very thing you want to do.
Right. Important things.
Well, I think, and what is important to people, to each person, is different.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we see here the difference between the successful and unsuccessful is how they spend those hours. That's pretty interesting. And there are lots of books you can read about how successful people start their day. It's quite interesting, actually. And then he repeated the words his friend Warren Buffett said to him. And Warren Buffett has more money than Bill Gates.
So Bill Gates should listen to him.
Right. I think We've talked about Warren Buffett on Advanced Classroom before, and Warren Buffett actually gives money to the Bill Gates Foundation
to
invest for his. We'll talk about more about that. But he says, Warren Buffett says, you have to be good at saying no. So saying no, as Rebecca said, allows you to concentrate on things that really make a difference in your own life. Okay. This is for yourself. It's not for anybody else.
Right.
So what makes a difference in your life is different than what makes a difference in my life.
And that's why I think it's really important that you're not focused on pleasing people. You don't want to be focused on pleasing your boss or pleasing parents. But you really
maybe a little bit.
Maybe a little bit there. But I think it is important, though, to know exactly what your call is, what you're specifically supposed to be doing. And so then you're not out to please your friends or please your boyfriend or girlfriend. And you can know when to say yes and when to say no.
Right, because to expand on that, it's really difficult sometimes to say no to people that you like or enjoy being with. But what happens is if you take on too many things, you end up failing at everything almost, and you just let down people anyways.
Right. Well, let's continue. We have three more points that Bill Gates talks about, and they are on page 14 at the top of the left-hand column. So let's continue reading there.
Be optimistic. Gates and his wife, Melinda, gave a commencement speech to Stanford University students in 2013. Using his philanthropic work in Africa as an example, he told students that they needed to be optimistic in order to achieve their goals. Optimism is often dismissed as false hope, but there is also false hopelessness, he said. Think about your success. Success is a lousy teacher. It seduces smart people into thinking they can't lose, he wrote. He went on to say, what seems the perfect business plan or latest technology today can soon be as out of date as the 8-track tape player or the mainframe computer. I've watched it happen. Measure your progress. You can achieve amazing progress if you set a clear goal and find a measure that will drive progress toward that goal, he said.
So we see that his fourth point of view is that you should be optimistic. And the opposite of optimistic is pessimistic. So when we are comparing the two, do you guys consider yourself optimistic or pessimistic?
I consider myself a very optimistic person. I like to be positive.
Okay, so positive is the key here.
Yes.
I like to be negative.
Okay. Well, why is he saying that we should be optimistic? You know, he gave a commencement speech, and a commencement speech is what?
Well, it's a speech given to graduating students, and it's usually done at a university.
Right. So we see here that it was at Stanford University, mm-hmm. and this is back in 2013. And he used his philanthropic work in Africa as an example in his talk. And if you're doing philanthropic work, you are promoting the welfare of others, especially by giving money to those who need it. And mm-hmm. there's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and they do a lot of philanthropic work by helping people in need in different areas and different places around the world. So when he used this as an example, he told students that, you know, you have to be optimistic to achieve your goals, because if you are pessimistic, Albert, mm-hmm. you achieve your goals?
I guess not.
No, if you're pessimistic, you're always looking for all the negatives. And
right.
the way I like to see it is, if you look for the positives, you're going to find them. If you look for the negatives, you're going to find the negatives too.
It's almost like there's a balance though, right?
Right. You can't be overly optimistic.
Well, okay, so I think this is interesting, because I mm-hmm. think we need, the last sentence that he says is, optimism is mm-hmm. often dismissed as false hope. But there's also false hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
So if we find ourselves in a position and we feel hopeless, is that what he's saying, that you shouldn't feel hopeless?
Well, I don't think we're supposed to feel hopeless. I think there's such thing as being realistic.
Okay.
And you don't want to be so optimistic to the point that you are giving people false hope, because maybe it's not reality.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's continue here. We're now thinking about your success. I think this is so interesting. Success is a lousy teacher.
That's funny.
Well, when it says, he goes on, it says, it seduces smart people into thinking they can't lose. That is so interesting. And if you're seduced into thinking something, it means maybe you have a false sense of security, like, mm-hmm. I'm so successful, I can't possibly fail at anything. And then he goes on to say why. It says, what seems the perfect business plan or latest technology today can soon be mm-hmm. as out of date as the 8-track tape player. Does anybody even remember what that is?
The 8-track tape player. I think I vaguely kind of sort of remember a little bit using a tape way, way, way back when.
Or the mainframe computer.
Oh,
this is what Albert was talking about earlier, right?
Yeah, so 8-track tape player, is that the one that came after the 7? No.
Actually, maybe I don't remember.
It's before the cassette tape, right? The
yes.
Sony Walkmans, where people have, yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that.
The Sony Walkmans or the 8? Oh.
We don't remember.
We don't remember, Linda.
So you see that it is not, it means, basically he's saying you have to keep up to date.
Right, I feel like mm-hmm. success makes people complacent, or they get really comfortable and they don't look towards the next thing that's coming up.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so what he's warning people of here is that, you know, if you have what you think is a perfect business plan or the latest technology, and then those, we kind of got sidetracked here, the 8-track tape player and the mainframe computer are examples of up-to-date technology for their time. Nobody even knows what they are now, right? And he's watched people fall into being failures yeah. because they haven't kept up to date.
Yeah, exactly. A more recent example would be like Netflix replacing Blockbuster, which had a dominance in mm-hmm. the States in terms of movie rentals.
I think the bottom line is you might be successful at one moment, mm-hmm. but then somebody could become even more successful than you later on.
I think we've also seen that in the phone industry, too.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of phones, you know, they've changed, or they, you know, smartphones. have taken over, you know, like flip phones, things that people never thought would ever be replaced.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to, you know, I think people in industry really have to keep on the cutting edge. Mm-hmm. And then we also have to measure our progress. Okay, that's his last point here. And what does this say, Rebecca?
Well, you can achieve amazing progress if you set a clear goal and find a measure that will drive progress toward that goal. And I think it is important to have goals, to have a very clear goal. If you don't have a goal or you don't have a way to measure whether or not you are close to reaching that goal, you'll never know if you are progressing or not.
Right.
Do you feel that way too?
Oh, no, totally. You know, there was a period when I wanted to gain weight and my trainer would tell me, like, hey, you have to measure how much what you accomplish every day instead of, and so you can see overall progress versus like some days I feel really tired and I can't do as much, then it's not really my fault, but it's just the days.
Right. You know. So measure your progress. Actually, Bill Gates said he was amazed at how few people follow this piece of advice. So I kind of am, too. Mm-hmm. I don't think we think about setting goals in particular, but maybe we need to change our thinking. So you can go back and review his 6 points that he talked about here and see if you glean anything new from it. And be sure and join us tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to continue our career article, but we're going to be talking about something completely different that you might find of interest. Bye for now.
Bye. Bye.